Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private paid therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hello, hello. Welcome to session 63 of Selling the Couch. Hope this podcast finds you doing really well and your family doing awesome. Today's podcast is all about how to build a heart-centered practice. And my guest today is Marie Dotrieve. Marie is a registered marriage and family therapy intern down in Florida. And she knew that when she got out of school and was in the process of wrapping up her training, that she really wanted to have a practice that aligned with her heart and who she was as a person. And so on today's podcast, we're going to talk all about how this heart-centered perspective influences and influenced a lot of the decisions that she made. Everything from choosing a supervisor, all the way to finding a private practice location, all the way to figuring out the clients that she wanted to see and how they lined up with who she was as a person. Even down to how does she go about marketing her services? I feel like sometimes this idea of sharing what we do out to the community and being heart-centered, it's very difficult to reconcile those two for us as clinicians, at least for many of us. And I wanted to have Marie on to really talk about how she does that. So here is my conversation with Marie Dotrieve from mariedotrieve.net. Hi, Marie. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm looking forward to our conversation as well. I think this idea of creating a heart-centered practice, I think it's going to resonate for a lot of folks because I do feel like the vast majority of us, we go into private practice and we want to create something that lines up with who we are as people.
Exactly. I knew that going in, but I wasn't sure what it was going to look like until it just kind of showed itself to me.
Yeah. And I think when we had been thinking about what our conversation would look like, we had thought about just addressing this idea of a heart-centered practice from different aspects. So I thought we would just get right to it. You know, one of the things I was thinking about was even early on, as you think about like a physical location for your private practice, how did you go about that, thinking about it like from your passions and just from a heart-centered perspective?
Sure. Well, it was interesting because I did something that was a little bit different in the sense that I came right out of grad school into my private practice. And so there were certain things that I had to have. For instance, I had to have licensed people involved and not necessarily involved in what I'm necessarily doing, but to be there in support if necessary. So I had to start kind of looking for practices that were open to having someone that was new. And also, the other part of that that was important to me is that I didn't want some sort of percentage situation. I didn't want someone to be my boss. I wanted someone to be my colleague who could also offer support in my newness in how I developed as a therapist. So finding the right spot became kind of interesting. The other thing that I knew for some reason I had in my head, in my mind, that trees would have to be involved in some way. But I didn't know exactly what that looked like. I just knew that when I closed my eyes and I thought about the space in which I would be supporting clients. So to be honest with you, I don't know exactly how I found the place that I did because I was looking at so many places at the same time. But I did find a practice that has about, right currently we have about 7 therapists, and they had everything that I was looking for. I wasn't being seen or treated as if I didn't know anything or as if that I didn't have value. They saw me as a colleague, which was really important and I was incredibly grateful for. So even though they have different expertise and wisdom that from just experience was really valuable to me, they never looked at me like I didn't know anything. And so, and that I knew about myself. And so they always kind of approached renting space to me as, and being part of this group, even though we're all sole proprietors of our business, we all kind of operate under the same umbrella as in space holding. So the space in which we practice in, but they, from the beginning, have always just trusted the fact that I would figure out what I'm doing and to ask questions as needed. It wasn't any trying to teach me kind of thing, which I really appreciated. It was important to me.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking, like, even taking a step back, it sounds like part of where that heart perspective came in was you deciding, you know, you want it to be a collaborative environment. You want it to be an environment where you felt like safe and secure. It sounded like there was like just some connection of like to connection to nature. It sounds like those were like aspects that were important to you.
Yes. In fact, outside of my window of my office, it's not a large space at all. It's a small, cozy space, but I have a window and outside of the window are trees. And there's an oak tree, two oak trees that are right outside that I can't necessarily see from my window, but they're there. And sometimes the trees have leaves that are in shape of hearts. And it's just beautiful to be able to look out. And it's like those leaves I can see during the most touching moments that I'm sitting across from somebody. So it is definitely supportive to me in that way. And you know, it's interesting because not everyone in my office has a heart-centered or spiritual-like view or way. We are all very, very different. And at first, I thought that part of my searching for a space would include other people that were very like-minded and where we could kind of support each other in that view of things. And I didn't find that, but I did find people that helped wake me up to who I am as a therapist. And I really appreciated that because it's in our differences that I found out who I was. And in my newness as a therapist, it was important to me to see, oh, that this is different, but that doesn't mean it's worse or better. It was still important for my clients to receive the support that they do from me, and it doesn't have to look like theirs. So it was really great to be around other people that are not like me in my practice or beliefs.
You know, it's so neat that you're mentioning that because one of the conversations that's actually happening in the Facebook community now is like this idea of like chasing influencers, right? And how did you get to a place where you decided that you wanted to just be you and that it was okay to be surrounded by colleagues that maybe didn't line up with you and that was okay? Like you could just be you.
Yeah, that's a hard one. You know, it took some time. In the beginning, you're so scared coming out of school that you have to be a certain way or align with the theoretical orientations that were presented to us. And I would just come into my office and it was almost like I was trying so hard to stay in this box that I didn't fit into. And it was actually my clients who helped me awaken to who I actually was. I mean, I knew that the whole time, but they helped me remember. And it started off really slowly and in the confines of my office space. So no one actually knew what I was doing or how I was presenting things, you know, and how I was believing in the wisdom of my clients to show me the way and show them the way. And we just kind of sat in the light of their own wisdom as we found things. And, you know, that's not mainstream. And, or at least it hasn't been from where I started. But the biggest one was my supervisor. Because my supervisor, it was, I'm a marriage and family therapist, registered intern. And so I had to find a marriage and family therapist to help supervise me. And there's not that many of them around in my area. So the person that I did find is not very connected to the way that I practice. And you know, at first I thought that was a problem. I was frustrated by it because I really wanted to hear ideas and support that I felt aligned with me. But what ended up happening was that she would share things that didn't align with me, but it helped me see this doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel like what my client is here for. So I was really able to find my own identity because of the support of an opposite viewpoint.
So it really helped, I guess, in that process, it really helped you to find your own voice.
Absolutely. Because I think that in that beginning stage, when I felt like I didn't really know anything or that what if I did it wrong, that person really helped me feel my way through it. Because I just had this, when she would say things, it just didn't feel right. So I think that if she said things that did align with me, I would have just wanted to follow what she was doing instead of waking up to my own. So it was incredibly valuable and still is. And I've discussed the fact that we're different and she does respect that. She still tries to guide me in a way that a supervisor will. But I've often been reminded by other healers in my life that, you know, people can offer you things and you don't always have to take them. You can just sit with them and see what it awakens in you. And that's kind of what I learned from it. It's been a great experience, even though we are completely, totally opposite from how we present ourselves to our clients to how we work with them. Mm. And it's been great.
I just love the approach that you're taking to the supervisory relationship. One of the things that you had also mentioned was just in terms of like the clients that you see and how you think about them, it sounds like you're just such a strength-based, you believe in the resilience of folks, you know, which I really believe in as well. How do you think having just a heart-centered practice or heart-centered orientation has impacted the clients that you see in your practice?
That's a beautiful question. And, you know, and I think about my clients, there's so much honor in their work. And I think part of it comes from the fact that I honor my own work and that I'm continuing to do my own work through that process. And so I actually feel really emotional when you ask that, because when I think about them, it's almost like they found me. You know, I hear things all the time from new clients that, you know, because I don't take insurance and my price is rather high for a registered intern. But when people come, they tell me things like they saw, it wasn't just what I said in my website, but they saw my picture and they knew that I was the person they were supposed to come see. So I think because I put out a heart honoring energy into the work that I do, that they can feel that somehow. So it starts way before we actually meet. You know, it starts by how they find me and whether or not it's being referred by somebody else or a friend or another colleague of mine or, you know, a friend that their friend that actually is one of my clients already. It's all been word of mouth pretty much. Very rarely do I have someone that just finds me from Psychology Today or something like that. But I do have random people that just stumble across my website. And when that happens, that's what they tell me. There's something about the energy that's in my website that made them come see me.
That's so interesting. So it sounds like part of it may be just like your photo. There's something about you, right? Do they like give any other insight into like what resonated for them on the website?
No, in fact, they're all confused by it so far. The ones that have said something. I don't really pry or talk that much about, you know, where I don't ask people a lot about where they got my information. It just is not one of those important questions to me. I'm not looking at it from a marketing kind of perspective. So usually it's just their mention. And usually it becomes because I do spend quite a lot of time in the beginning. I do a consultation session with clients, either in person or on the phone, just to make sure that I'm the right fit for them and that they're the right fit for my practice, because the therapeutic relationship has been such an incredible, soul-moving, valuable experience in my life that the therapeutic relationship that I have with my clients is the most important piece to it for me. So I do offer time for us to get together. And in that time, you know, I talk to them about whether or not if I'm not the right person, that I'll be happy to help them find someone to refer them to. And that's where I usually get the information of this is why I found you and this is why I'm here. So no, just the fact that a lot of times they don't understand it. And most of the time when people are coming, they're not necessarily coming from their own. They don't have a current practice of being really heart-centered or soul-centered. And they feel like, I don't know, this is almost like the first experience that they're remembering having, even though once we start the work, we realize it's not the first experience from the moment they walked in therapy. They've actually been this way their whole lives and they don't even know it. So until they've decided to start doing the work surrounding it. So yeah, it's not like I have people that walk in that are saying, I'm very spiritually enlightened and want to only meet with a soul-centered therapist and heart-centered therapist and do that kind of work that way. They just show up as who they are. And a lot of times they don't understand necessarily why, except for the fact that their heart and soul had led them here.
That's amazing that in some ways they just almost find themselves right through that process of learning about you, of talking with you and starting therapy with you.
Yes.
I wanted to actually just take a step back, which is you said you do the initial consult. So tell me like at a practical level, like how sometimes you talk on the phone, sometimes live, how long do you talk for? What are some of the other questions that you ask potential clients just to see if you guys are a good fit?
I prefer when people come in because the space that I've created is it's almost like a partner with me. I've partnered with my space. I put a lot of intention into my space and I come in early and there's candles that I light and I'm an expressive arts therapist. And so there's different things in my room that are there to support our work. And one of them is I have an art piece that says the word shame, and I have a candle that I light in front of it every time to bring light to the word shame, because that's what a lot of people are feeling when they come see me. And I have another one under the word truth. And so I have this way of intention setting within my space where my space actually becomes my partner in the time that we spend together with people. So I like it when they come here, because sometimes that might be overwhelming and that's not what they're looking for. And so I want them to see the whole thing. I want to be really transparent in the beginning of our relationship of what this looks like and who I am. And so I prefer it better when we're in person, but sometimes we do talk on the phone and it doesn't go more than about 45 minutes. Sometimes I feel that I wonder whether or not that's an actual good number for me, because sometimes it can almost be like a whole session, even though we're not really doing any therapy. We're just really talking about what therapy looks like to them and what they're looking for. Right. But I do leave space for an hour, but it never really kind of goes that quite that long.
So then those are kind of like a free initial consult, that 45 minutes?
Yes, it's important to me that people feel comfortable coming in and really knowing that I honor that time with them and for me, it's okay for it to be free, because I want people to come in here understanding that what they are actually seeking. So far, that's worked for me. And if it changes, then I may not offer that. Right. But right now, that's what feels right to me.
No, I mean, I think it's very wise, because just thinking about the other clinicians that I've had on the podcast, a lot of them say that just the fit between the client and the therapist, doing something early on to ensure that and to figure out what that looks like, is so vital to the therapeutic relationship.
Yes. Well, one of the things that I cover from the very get-go is, you know, I've tried different ways of doing therapy, but what I realize I get the most frustrated with is very surface level work. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not a judgment when that is happening, it's just that something I don't feel comfortable in. And I think mainly it's because that my personal work is so deep that I don't know how to necessarily stay in that space. I live in this very deep place. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult for me to kind of pop up to the surface to be there where people want to be. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that I start there and we go down slowly. That, of course, I want to meet with them where they are. But if all they're wanting at that moment is something that really is more surface, I need to know that ahead of time, because it doesn't resonate with me and my work with them. And so I can help refer them. I have very great colleagues that's their space of comfort and that's their space of expertise, and they are the right fit then for them. So that's one of the biggest questions I have, is kind of talking about what are you actually looking for? Because the work that I do, you know, we're not going to stay in that space very long of just surfacey.
How did you get to that place of realizing that you don't have to accept every client that comes through your door, that you can refer and that the ideal client will come?
I think it was, once again, I come back to my own work. I think it's when I realized that my therapist had choices, because before I was kind of, you know, I was approaching the relationship as I pay her and she has to be there. Mm-hmm. But when I actually got brave enough to talk to her about why she's there a little bit more, and, you know, still sometimes I have questions about that, but that it's not just about the money, that there is choice from the clinician side, is when I realized that, you know, that wouldn't be fair to me if that wasn't her truth. Mm-hmm. If it was just about the money, then she can't be there on a human view too. Money's just that energetic exchange that we agreed upon. But, you know, I need her to be there in the way that her soul is called to show up there too. And because of that, and because this is something that we have talked about, that also had to be reflected in my practice as well. So yeah, that's kind of when I decided that it's not fair for me to be there with someone that I don't resonate with the work. It doesn't mean that I don't respect them or who they are or any of those things. It just means that the work doesn't resonate with how I can support them.
I like how you're distinguishing between the work I can do versus all of the other things. I think a lot of times we blend all of that together, and that is why I think it makes it really hard to let go of, you know, seeing a potential client.
Yeah. And, you know, and the money aspect is so important because, I mean, obviously this is my job. Mm-hmm. So the money that I receive, I'm incredibly grateful for, and it's important. It's an important piece of it. I'm not willing to do it for free. However, there has to be something other than the money that is a part of it. So as soon as it becomes, I'll work with anybody because I want the money that they're bringing in, then to me, that's labeling them as with price tags on them. And I'm not willing to do that. So I wouldn't want to be seen that way. And so therefore I can't look at my clients, you know, as a number coming through the door that I'm making instead of the person that I'm actually experiencing in that moment.
Again, a really good like way to distinguish it, because I think as when we put on a business hat, we can feel like numbers, and I think sometimes we can forget that they're people in real pain.
Yeah. And, you know, as soon as I say that this is not the right person for me and I help them find somebody else, it's like three other people show up that are. Mm. So, you know, sometimes if I didn't have space for them, they wouldn't be there. If I didn't create the space for the right person to be there, then there wouldn't be space.
Yeah, absolutely. You said one of the things that you started to talk about was money, and I feel like this topic has come up enough among our colleagues. One, how do you handle money in terms of like how you charge and how you talk to clients about money and your fees? Mm-hmm. I guess how do you do that in a way that's authentic?
Yeah, that's changed over the years. I've been in practice now for 3 years, a little bit over that, and that has changed. You know, I started out one client. And it was one client that came with me from when I was still in school. I also, besides being at a psychiatric hospital for my internship, I was also in private practice because I knew I wanted to go in private practice. So she actually left that and came with me to my private practice. So my fee for her actually has stayed the same because there's something in that relationship that feels important to me to keep it there. Mm. But then the rest of it, I've changed my price as I've experienced more and got more training. And, you know, when I start feeling uncomfortable or almost not resentment, but feel something, when I don't still feel positive about the price that I'm changing, that I'm charging, I have to sit with it for a little while and see, okay, what's going on here? And sometimes it's because all of a sudden I realize I value my work more than what I'm charging. And so this price right now just doesn't align with me. And so I up it usually about $5 increments. So, and that has not been a problem. I had to sit with my money story, and I'm still sitting with my money story. This is not at all a done deal, but I am very comfortable right now with, you know, just being really transparent. This is how much I charge. This is what it looks like if it's a 90-minute session, because I do a lot of 90-minute sessions. Sometimes people ask me if I'll do a sliding scale, and I don't offer that. I do offer a discount for students, but that's all there is. So I've had clients that sometimes have situations where all of a sudden they couldn't pay temporarily what I charge. And so I have taken a smaller fee. However, it's not a smaller fee as in this session, I'll only charge you $75. It's okay, you can only pay $75 this time, but we'll kind of keep it a tab. And then eventually they catch up. And for me, that works. It doesn't work for everybody, but I've never had a client that didn't honor that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's because of the energy in which we created that contract and that understanding, and we talk about it. And because we talk about it, it doesn't feel weird. So that being said, it's not like I haven't had people where they didn't come back or something like that, or that there was money owed. I have, and those were learning lessons for me. So, but for the most part, I have it for clients, and those, by the way, were not my ideal clients anyway. So, but for the other piece of it, I just have to sit with it in every moment, what feels right. And then I have to think about, is this fair to the other people that I work with? Because I always want to make sure that that is. So even though the numbers may not be the same, my intention is the same. Mm. So, and that to me feels ethical.
Yeah. So just in general, it sounds like as with new clients, or sometimes depending on how long you've had them, the fees could potentially vary, but ultimately it is about finding something that aligns with your heart and what resonates for you.
Yes. And for the most part, everybody's the same. Mm-hmm. And when people call me and they ask me about my price and they don't want to pay that, you know, we talk a little bit about the reasoning behind it, but the other thing I offer them is, you know what? We don't have to do traditionally once a week therapy. If, you know, think about it from a month perspective, what are you willing to invest in yourself and your healing for a month? And sometimes that means we see each other twice a month. And sometimes we see each other, you know, once a month, or sometimes people are open to, you know, once a week and doing 90 minute sessions, or doing every other week for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just play with what it looks like to them. And I kind of just widen the lens a little bit, because it doesn't have to be traditional once a week, you know, 50 minute sessions. I don't end up doing 50 minute sessions anyway. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for me. So
do you usually do what, 60 minute or?
Yeah, I actually go to the 60 minute mark, but like I said, most of my clients go to 90, and I always start everybody at 60. But once we have that feeling of, you know, things haven't been said, or that there's an abruption and stopping and that kind of stuff. And I realize that's partially how I guide it and things like that, that sometimes we get so into the work that there's not a lot of transition time at the end, but there's a lot of work. I mean, I work with a population who is doing a lot of deep work. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes 60 minutes doesn't hold it. And so we need to go to 90 minutes, and we talk about it, and we adjust it as needed. And sometimes it's 90 minutes for a couple of months, and then we can go back. So we're just very open and communicative about how we show up in this space together.
Yeah, I think you just said it so well, which is ultimately, I think it's about creating a practice that is based on transparency and authenticity. And I know that like sounds so cliche, but it's those little things I think that does make for a successful practice on multiple levels.
Yes. I think the biggest one that it affects, how it affects me, is that when I leave my space, I leave my work. Not that I don't leave with the heart and love that I have for the people I work with, because that is always there, because to me, they're part of humanity and there's a connection there. But I don't carry anything with me. Oh, I wish I would have said that, or I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have charged them this, because that transparency in the moment allows me to, it's part of my self-care, which I didn't realize until it was happening, because I talk to other people that really are bringing things home. And we talk about the things that they bring home. It's not necessarily the stories that they hear, but it's the regret in the moment of what they did or didn't do, or what they paid or didn't pay. And so it's important to me to always be kind of in that moment and say what is actually happening in the room, instead of not, because otherwise it's coming home with me, and that doesn't feel good, because that's not honoring myself and my own self-care.
Marie, just wanted to thank you so much for doing this. I just hearing you talk, and just in the time that, you know, I've gotten to know you, I can just sense how much you care about your clients. And it's truly honored that you would come on.
Thank you so much, Melvin. It was an honor for you. I mean, this is my first podcast interview, so I'm so excited that I did it with you. Thank you.
What are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Well, I am going through a transition with my website, but currently my website is probably the best place that you can find any information. It has my email as well as my phone number, and that is mariedotrieve.net.
Awesome. I will put that in the show notes. Marie, thank you again.
Thank you so much, Melvin.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Marie. Man, there was some really good information in there. And just being on the other end, you know, just interviewing Marie, I could just sense how much she really cared about her clients, and how much just being heart-centered meant so much to her. It was actually hard. You know, there was that moment in there, you could see that she kind of choked up, and it was hard for me. Like, I started choking up too, because I do think that many of us, I think the overwhelming majority of us, go into private practice with a genuine desire to help, and we're just kind people. And I feel like sometimes in this day of social media and marketing and all this sort of cutting edge stuff, that it's really easy to lose that perspective of caring for the people that we see. You can find show notes to today's episode at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 63. So I have a huge announcement. This is something I have been working on behind the scenes, which I think at this point, almost 45 hours put into doing this, which is I created a really comprehensive podcasting tutorial for you guys. Several folks have been reaching out wanting to do consults, and I've done consults with folks, but just needing, several folks have reached out needing help with launching their podcast. And so it's a blog post. I created it for you. It contains videos, contains a lot of step-by-step things that I think will really help you get started with your podcast. You can find that at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting tutorial. Have a great rest of your week, and take good care.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.